Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our monthly Luncheon Leadership Conference call. If you would like a copy of today's slides or you would like to share a playback of today that also has the slides, you can visit our website tomorrow at scarletleadership.com, and you'll find that on the homepage. If during the call you have a question, hit *7. We'd love to hear from you. And if you're watching from your desk online, you can enter your question in the Q&A box and hit send. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Joe Scarlett.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another one of our Lunch and Learn conference calls. Today we have with us Dan Hale. I've known Dan for over a decade. He's a first-class executive coach, consultant, and all-around leadership guru. And we're going to chat this afternoon about the follower, the leadership-follower relationship. But first, let's turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thank you, Joe. We're glad to be with you again. And Dan, I'm really glad that you're here. Dan and I have been friends for a very long time. I don't even know how long it's been, but I've followed him in his career before he was a coach and then have known him as a coach and have actually referred clients to him. So we're really glad that you're here today. When I asked him, you know, kind of his take on leadership, he was saying it's all about the relationship, which just resonated with Joe and me because we talk about that all the time. So let's just jump right in and talk about defining the leader-follower relationship and why it's so important.
Sure. And first of all, Mary and Joe, thanks very much for having me on today. You know, there have been thousands of books written on leadership going back at least 2,600 years that we know about to The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And you can get a lot of different definitions of leadership, a lot of lists of what's critical to leadership. And we take a somewhat slightly tongue-in-cheek approach to what's critical about the leader-follower relationship in that we like to say that the acid test for identifying whether or not somebody is a leader is, well, they've got followers. And people joke about that, and sometimes they'll say, yeah, but seriously. And we go, no, seriously, you know, you can tell if somebody's a leader if they've got followers. And then we ask folks that we're working with, and almost invariably everybody raises their hand, how many folks have known or worked with somebody who was in a quote-unquote leadership position who was supposed to be a leader, and yet if you talk to those they would supposedly lead, you know, you would find out that if that person was across the street on fire, they wouldn't cross the street with a bucket of water to put them out, much less to follow them anywhere. And so what we believe is that it's essential to forming a leader-follower relationship to understand the psychology that's present there. And so it's about relationships. And we've worked with plenty of people aspiring to be leaders that are very transactionally oriented, check the box, get things done. And we posit the idea that if you really want to be a leader, if you want people to follow you, you've got to find out what makes them tick. Why would they follow you? What motivates them? What are they passionate about? Why are they giving you, in this day and age, close to, if not more than half the waking hours of their life in service of this organization's goals? Behavioral psychologists tell us that all human behavior is really pretty selfish. It's in service of our own basic goals and needs and passions and everything that we do. So even if somebody is following me, and we'd like to ask, why would somebody follow you up the hill into a hailstorm of gunfire, using a military metaphor? And for them to follow me, they've got to believe that there's something at the top of the hill for them, that following me up the hill is going to move them in the direction of something that's important to them. Now, for some people, you know, for your staff person, or, you know, maybe it's simply just getting a paycheck and, you know, ensuring the continued provision of food, clothing, and shelter. But for other people, it's advancing their career, getting more experience, ascribing to perhaps my office one day, or to be the CEO, or to go start their own business. But leadership starts with finding out why other people would follow you and taking the time to learn that.
Right. And there's a difference between what I get from my title and what I get from being a leader. Followers might do what I tell them to do because they know it's not in their best interest. It's a career-limiting choice not to. But to truly follow and try to make my vision their vision, to be committed as opposed to compliant, is really what we're talking about.
It is. And, you know, if you study leadership and management, we'd like to actually put both definitions on the table and say, and we ascribe to a leadership definition that says that leadership is the art and science of persuading others to willingly move towards a common goal. And that the management definition is that's accomplishing predetermined objectives through other people. And although they overlap, what's missing from the management definition is there's no willingness on the part of the person being managed. We say jump and they say how high. Now, so it's this idea of the willingness, the motivation, the psychology of it that's absolutely essential for leadership, we believe. And we're fond of telling those we work with, everybody's not cut out for leadership, and it's not uncommon people get thrust into leadership roles and find out, you know, this isn't really what I thought it would be. It's a lot harder. Leaders have to make difficult decisions for the good of the organization that sometimes negatively impact individuals. It's a highly stressful role. It's long hours. You're under a microscope when you're a leader in an organization, and you're frequently subject to the judgment and criticism of other people. And not everybody's cut out for that, and that's okay. But for those who ascribe to that, if you really want people to follow you, you've got to find out what makes them tick.
I saw a video once, and the narrator of the video said, if you don't love people, get out of the business. It's just not where you need to be.
Absolutely.
And like you said, some people end up being promoted because it's the way to get ahead in the company for whatever reason, for whatever ambitions that I have. But if I'm not in that state of mind, I'm probably better off to stay away. So then would you say born or made?
It's a really good question, and I think leaders can be made. We've worked with folks that have been thrust into leadership roles and never having had any kind of leadership training, and I believe that everybody deserves the benefit. If they don't know any better and they've never had strong leadership modeled for them, then they've got an excuse until such time that they realize, no, there's a better way to do things, and there are particular tactical actions that are essential to being a strong leader. I've worked, and as you guys know, I come from a finance and accounting background, so I've gotten to work with a lot of finance people, IT people, people that are probably primarily analytical and more left-brained. But even folks like that can learn to understand that a lot of times they'll view the world very transactionally. And so not to sound cold, but folks can learn, okay, part of my list of transactions today is I need to spend some time meeting with my people and just check in and see how they're doing and find out. And that's on my list, and I can actually check the box.
In my experience with Tractor Supply, we promoted lots of people who didn't necessarily have any natural ability in leadership, but where they had common sense and a good attitude, almost always they could learn how to be good leaders. So if you got common sense and you got a good attitude, you can learn how to lead. I think if you're an introvert, it might be a different story, but most people can be turned into good leaders. It's not all that complicated. It's common sense. It's simple work, sometimes very repetitive, but it's something that can be accomplished by most people.
I agree completely. And even with folks that are somewhat introverted, we've learned, if you take that battery metaphor that they use for extroverts versus introverts, that being around people charges the batteries of an extrovert, but it drains batteries of an introvert, that situationally sometimes introverts, they just need to schedule some time to be alone to recharge their batteries before they have to move into a leadership role, present to a board or manage a big meeting, things like that. I like to tell the story. I worked with the CFO of a well-known company here in town, and I had worked with the CEO. And he, near the end of our engagement, he said, I'd like for you to work with the CFO, and our leadership team wants him to be more of a leader. He's a very transactional kind of guy, but we want him to become kind of more skilled interpersonally. And so after about a month of meeting the CFO, I gave him a homework assignment. I said, I want you to put a recurring appointment on your calendar for every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And when you come in, you know, check your email, voicemail, make sure there's no fires to put out. And then I want you to go spend 30 minutes spending 5 minutes with each of your 6 direct reports, and you can't talk about business. All you can do is ask them, how was your weekend? How's your family doing? Where are you going on vacation this summer? And the last 30 seconds, you know, if you want to talk business, but the majority of the conversation has to be just connecting with them. And so the next time I went back to meet with the CFO, I said, so did you do your homework? And he had an excuse. So I said, okay, well, we'll get it on the calendar next time. Next appointment, same story. So third appointment, I said, so did you do your homework? And he said, look, he said, I just don't think that's a good use of my time. It's not moving me towards my goals. And I think that's a waste of time to schedule time meeting with other people just to see how they're doing. And so I had to go back to the CEO and say, I don't think this is going to work.
I've run across a number of task-oriented people like that in my career. And one of the things that I did on more than one occasion is take them for a trip with me visiting stores where they're out of their comfort zone, and watch leadership in action by district managers or myself or by store managers, and it sort of opened their eyes, and by putting them in a different world, it made them look at things differently, and many of them turned into very good leaders later on.
Sure.
I'll share a story that has a different ending, similar to yours, but with a different ending, and it's not my story, it's a friend of mine, but she was coaching someone who was a leader, actually a sales person who was trying to lead a sales group, and he had some of his own clients. He was that person that really didn't care about small talk, had a very hard time, was an introvert, which is kind of unusual for a salesperson, but had a hard time just chatting about things. So she said, I want you to do one thing. He was meeting with a client that night, hoping to close a deal. She said, I want you to promise me that you will do one thing, only one thing, and that is, before you say anything else to this person, I want you to make a personal comment. I don't care what it is. It could be about your family. It could be about the weather. It could be about what's going on in sports, but I want you to share something or ask a personal question. So the next day he called her and he said, you're not going to believe this. And she said, I bet I will. And he said, we sat down, and he said, I couldn't think of a thing to say because I didn't know that we had anything in common. So I said, I like your tie. And he was wearing a tie with some sports figures or something on it, which led to a conversation about sports, which led to a conversation which let them know that they had kids in the same soccer league. So they did have something in common. They chatted for a while. They had dinner. He signed the contract. All was well with the world, and it made a believer out of that person that there really is, it's not wasted time, it's not fluff or filler for getting down to the real work of the meeting. It is the real work of the meeting, establishing that relationship. So I love that story. Just one comment about, you know, just one comment, one personal comment.
Indeed. There's a management model we learned a long time ago, and I know we've got a slide in here for it. I might be getting slightly ahead, but there are two questions that leaders and followers, or you could say managers and subordinates, are constantly but often subconsciously asking themselves related to the other. And those two questions are can you, which speaks to competence, and will you, which speaks to motivation. And can you, will you help me accomplish my goals? Now, when the leader is judging the would-be follower or subordinate, are you competent and are you motivated to help me accomplish my goals? The leader is thinking in terms of organizational goals. It could be for the whole company or a particular division or department. conversely, but simultaneously, the subordinate is asking themselves of this person who would hope to have them follow them, well, can you and will you help me accomplish my own personal goals? Are you competent as a leader and a manager? You know, do you understand our business? Can you get me the resources I need to be successful? Can you answer the questions I have when I don't know the answer? Can you point me to the right place to get the particular answer? Can you get me the training that's essential? Can you remove obstacles that get in the way when I'm trying to accomplish the goals that you've assigned me? And what's more, not only I'm wondering, are you competent as a leader and a manager, but are you motivated as a leader and a manager to help me be successful? Do you understand how I would define success? Do you understand where I hope to go in my career? Do you understand what values are important to me? Do you understand my personality? Do you understand that I'm an introvert and that I can only be around people for so long and I need to get some time by myself to recharge my batteries? Do you understand what my strengths and weaknesses are? Do you know what my kids' names are, you know, or how long my wife and I have been married? Things like that. Because if you care enough about me to know those things, it's going to make a big difference in the effort that I'm willing to put forth in service of our department or unit or company goals. And yet, so often those conversations don't take place.
One of the things that I often teach new managers and new leaders is when you first get into your role, the last thing you want to do is start giving orders. The first thing you want to do is start learning about people. Ask them about how's business going, what do you see as opportunities here, what are the obstacles in your way, tell me about your family, what do you do on the weekends, where's your vacation, how are your kids doing in soccer, and you develop a rapport with people, and then they begin to believe you're a real human being. And then when you do get to the point of giving orders, well, I know the boss, and by the way, if this doesn't make sense, I can go talk to him or her about it. It gets you off to a much better start. I've seen so many times where a new manager takes over, a new manager starts giving orders, boom, 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 right away, and immediately creates this steel wall between the manager and the people who work for him. So getting to know your people is a sort of a key point of being able to for people to develop confidence in you and respect for you, and therefore will follow you.
People that are transactionally oriented, I've coached them, we like to say, Get those you would lead, get them out of the office, get them out of the four walls of the building, because the relationship is different. The energy is different. Take them to lunch, take them to dinner, take them to coffee, whatever you can do, and spend a good amount of time just getting to know these people and find out what makes them tick. And, Joe, you're laughing.
Well, I was going to say, take them on a roller coaster ride.
Find out what their fears are.
And I mean, that's why I think, and I'm a pitiful golfer, but I've played enough golf to know that, in the business world, it changes energy. Again, you get outside the office and the relationship changes, and it's easier to find out what's really important to people and what makes them tick.
Right. I think too many organizations put a lot of effort and resources behind having an elaborate, formal, independent development plan put together that people can figure out where it is they want to go in the organization. And that's all fine and well and good because it does prepare them for that. But the piece that's missing there is any one person taking the interest in that person to try to say, I'll help you get there. It's informal, it's cold, it's not personal. And so if I check all these boxes, then I can be this in this role. But maybe not. Maybe there are other things that are in the way. So I wanted to go back to, in the first slide, the second comment that we had was that there's a critical nature of the leadership behaviors, and I know you've alluded to that a little bit. But so how, other than management by or leadership by walking around, which we have a great example of here with
sure.
Joe, and spent most of his time in the stores, and I won't tell your story, you can. But But what are some of those critical behaviors?
And we think there are three primary tactical behaviors that are essential to effective, efficient leadership in the 21st century. And here's what they are. The first one actually has two parts. The first one is a person who wants to lead has to get clear on what the direction of the organization is. Some leaders are visionaries, like the Steve Jobs of the world, and some people come into leadership roles, and they may not necessarily be a visionary, but they can work with a team of people, or sometimes they inherit a vision, and it's essential to have clarity on the mission and vision of the organization, the strategies that are going to take us in that direction over the next 3 to 5 years, the tactics, and perhaps most importantly of all, the values and behaviors that we think are essential to executing these things that will help to make us successful, that we really want to build the foundation of our organization on. So a leader first gets clear on that, and then part B of that first leadership pillar is then they have to tell everybody. They have to, whether the people who would follow them, the customers, the public, this is where we're going. This is how we hope to get there. These are the values that we believe will take us there. So much so that it becomes second nature to the people in the organization, and there's a felt sense of movement in the organization.
When everybody knows where we're all going, they're going to help everybody get there. You get together as a team. When I was running Tractor Supply, at every sales meeting, I'd always stand up and talk about the mission of the company, and I spent a lot of time talking about the values, and you could just see people light up, and everybody knew, well, here's where we're going, here's what we believe in, here's what's important to us, and people follow that kind of situation, and what happened is as I did it, all of a sudden the people under me were mimicking the same behavior in lower-level groups all the time, so that throughout the organization, we had a continual discussion of the company's mission, the company's values and direction, and it became something everybody could buy into because everybody believed in it.
Right, and a shared vision is one of those things that people tell us will break down silos faster than anything else, that I'm not just in my groove doing my thing because that's what I have to do. It's because it's a part of something bigger.
We like to say that if people have a clear sense of where they're going and the strategies and tactics and values that we believe will take us there, it makes the company more productive because you might have a meeting with a bunch of mid-level managers and they're debating whether or not to buy the red widget or the blue widget, but if they're really clear on that, you know, we value quality over price, for example, that the red widget is a much better quality and we're willing to pay a little bit more for it than we are the blue widget, and decisions get made and progress gets made more readily. And so we believe very strongly. I do this exercise when I'm meeting with leadership teams or presenting to them, and about midway after talking about this first pillar in 21st century leadership of creating and communicating a vision very strongly and creating a sense of direction, I'll say, okay, clear your desks and take out a clean sheet of paper. And everybody kind of looks at it. And I said, no, seriously, everybody take out a clean sheet of paper. And so they do, and I say, write down your company's mission and vision and values. And then, you know, and so I'll give them a minute to do that. And then I say, okay, trade papers with your neighbor. We're going to grade them. And then I kind of say, okay, I'm kind of joking, but how did you do? How well do you know this? Because if the leadership of this company is doing a good job communicating those things, everybody should know these things by heart. And then I look at them and I say, and, you know, and this is when these people are leading other people. I say, typically when it's a senior leadership team, I said, if I was to meet with your direct reports, how would they do on this quiz? How well do they know the mission and vision and values and the direction? And it's not essential that you have it memorized word for word, but that you have a general feel for what we're about and where we're trying to go.
Exactly. And nobody has done that better than Joe at Tractor, because I don't think you ever – certainly never in a meeting that I was in, no matter at what level, you talked about mission, vision, values.
Always. That way you keep everybody on the same page. You keep everybody going in the same direction.
And I will tell you, it has one additional, often unintended benefit, is if a leader continues passionately, sometimes almost obsessively, saying, this is where we're going, this is how we're going to get there, this is where we're going, this is how we're going to get there, then when you have those in the organization who don't buy into that and don't believe that that's the direction they should be going, that the company should be going, or as we like to say, they don't particularly care for that flavor of Kool-Aid, those people will self-select out of the organization sooner or later.
And that's great.
Indeed it is. And it saves a lot of headaches.
A lot of
problems.
Headaches, yes.
So then the second pillar, the second tactic is, it's not rocket science, and it's not new. And I refer back most often to the famous book by Jim Collins, Good to Great, where he talks about getting the right people in the right seats on the bus. So once we tell everybody this is where the bus is going, then we find people who want to go in that same direction that the bus is going, and we find people with the right competence and motivation for the particular seats on the bus, so they'll be successful in whatever role that they choose. And this gets back to this whole idea of there being a congruence between, this is the direction we're going, we want to find people who want to go in that direction too, who believe that their efforts in service of us going in that direction will take them where they want to go in their career, will make their efforts fulfilling for them because they believe it's moving them towards the person they want to become. It's honoring the values that they honor. And we really believe people are more motivated, and you get a bigger bang for your buck when folks like the flavor of Kool-Aid that you're serving. Again,
sure.
To use that metaphor, that they're bought in.
Absolutely. Committed, and will do anything they can to make it happen.
Because it's fulfilling for them. They see that by climbing that hill into the hailstorm of gunfire, that it's moving them closer in service of their goals. And there's a reciprocity there,
right?
Because they know that other people care about them. And then the third pillar, the third tactical pillar is simply to course correct. And sometimes people will say, well, that sounds overly simple. But look at it this way. So we said we wanted to go in this direction. We defined it in terms of a mission and a vision and strategies and values. So the third step is to say, how are we doing? Not only how are we doing on our goals as a company, and are we making earnings, or if it's a publicly traded company, for example, but starting at the top with the leader, you know, these are the things I said as the leader I was going to accomplish, and these are the values I said I wanted to honor. This is the talk I've got to walk. How am I doing on it? And let's ask the people who worked for me, let's get feedback from them. How am I doing as the leader of the organization? And again, obviously, if you're a publicly traded company, the shareholders will give you a lot of feedback in terms of how you're doing. But if a leader has to be willing to hold themselves up to the scrutiny of others in terms of, are we doing what we said we want to? Because leadership team, we're going to evaluate you if you're doing what we said we wanted to, and we're going to ask those you would lead, are you moving us in the direction we wanted to go? And then we're going to do the same thing with the people under you. And it's one giant course correction. We said, this is the direction we wanted to go. Are we on course?
In order to know if you're on course, you have to have numbers, and you're talking about public companies. But I would encourage people in private companies to do the same thing. Share the numbers with your people. Don't keep them secret.
Absolutely.
Well, you want people to follow you. They got to know what the report card is, and you're up in sales or you're down in sales, you're up in profits, down in profits. Share with people. The more you share with them, the more they'll believe in you, trust you, and follow you, and help you achieve the goals you want to achieve.
Exactly. So we've talked a lot about the relationship and how important it is and what some of the behaviors are. If I am in a leadership situation and I am trying to be a better leader myself, I can certainly take your advice and I can do some of these things, or maybe all of these things in an order. If I am trying to grow leaders within my organization, And, you know, it's wonderful if I have the resources to bring in somebody to work with everybody, but not everybody has that opportunity. What can I do to bring some people along? How can I peel away some of those layers myself and help people get better?
Well, I think the first step in that process, Mary, goes back to knowing who's interested in following that track.
Knowing the people.
Yeah, I mean, organizations are going through succession planning processes, and it's very common that they'll rank everybody on their team. And so they'll say, well, this is our top 10 people. And then we'll ask, okay, are these your top 10 people who have said they want to have your job one day? You know, are they committed?
Do you know that?
Do you know that? Have you had that conversation with them? Because it's not going to do any good for us to invest in preparing these people to be the next generation of leadership of the organization if numbers 2, 3, and 5 on the list are technically proficient, but when it comes to leading other people and the investment that's necessary for these relationships, it's just not their bag, or sometimes maybe they're extremely introverted. And they would tell you, I'm completely comfortable doing what I do right now, and thanks for asking me, but no, I really don't want to move to the next level.
Right. And then you haven't wasted their time or your time. You've gotten into the pool, those people that really want to be in the pool, and it's just better for everybody.
And so, but once we determine, no, this person is a future leader and we want to invest in them, then invest in them. Spend money and, you know, to send them to the Scarlet Leadership Institute. Spend money, get them an executive coach. Spend money on a comprehensive 360 assessment where you talk to a dozen people they work with every day to find out, what does this person do really well that we want to affirm and celebrate? What, if anything, are they not as strong at that we want them to do more efficiently or maybe start doing, period? And what, if any, behaviors do they have that are just downright destructive or dysfunctional that we would tell them, hey, you know, if you're in a meeting with a room full of people, particularly if it's your meeting, stop checking your email, you know, because other people, it doesn't communicate a particularly good message. And as I have my phone in front of me, I want to say I'm following along the agenda. I'm checking my email. So, and commit to those people and invest in them. We talk here about born leaders. It's our belief that very, very few people are truly born leaders. Joe, what do you think?
Well, I was going to go just hitchhike back on what we were just talking about. One of the developmental tools that I think is so important is to get people out of their comfort zone and give them exposure to doing things where they can learn and see and where you can learn and see. I go back to my Tractor Supply experience. Taking promising store managers out of their stores for a little while to help set up a new store is one thing to do. Take promising buyers to trade shows. Take promising people who are somewhere in your leadership ranks, take them on store tours with you.
Sure.
Get them out of their comfort zone so that they can see and learn and understand what the rest of the world's all about, and that you as a leader can then see how they're reacting, and you get a better handle on whether they really are preparing themselves for the future, whether they really are the people you should have on the path to growth.
Right. There's another thing I think that sometimes we don't do a great job at, and that is we have succession planning. I know one organization that does something quarterly, and they do the ranking, and they have this list of people that are high potential, probably mover-uppers. They don't share that with them. They don't tell those people. And the reason when I've asked is that we don't want to make a promise we can't keep. We don't want the other person to assume they're going to get that job. I think you can be just as clear about that as you can be clear about, we think you have potential, and we'd like to invest some resources in bringing you along. I need to know what your ambitions are. I need to know if that is in alignment with what it is you want to do. But I'm not going to just hold that back, and all of a sudden, one day there's a vacancy and I promote this person. There's been no conversation about it.
Indeed. And we have to understand, we think you have potential. This is kind of like a disclaimer on an ad or something. You know, there's no guarantee of promotion
exactly.
attached to this whatsoever.
Exactly.
But nonetheless, we see that you have potential, and we would like to invest in you or you gain.
I also look to individuals' initiative. If you're in a job and you want to get ahead, what initiative have you taken to go to your boss and say, hey, boss, I want to move up the ladder. What skills do I need to develop? What experiences do I need to have? You know, let's see. You want to get ahead. It's up to you as an individual to take the initiative to begin to lay out plans
for yourself. Or raise my hand when there's a project that's available or something coming down the pipe.
Yeah, something bad happens. Jump in and say, I'm going to help solve the problem. I'm going to help fix things.
So let me play devil's advocate just for a second. If we go back to our original definition, in a successful leader-follower relationship, the leader will already know that. They will have already gone to that person and found out, are you interested in getting ahead? Are you interested in developing new skills? Would you like additional training one day? What can we do to help you get ahead? But similarly, and it's very common that, as I learned, the leader doesn't always do that, then it is incumbent upon the subordinate to go initiate that conversation.
Either way, you got to have the conversation.
You got to have the conversation, clearly. And so those are the three primary tactics that we see are essential to leadership. I've had people ask me, they'll say, well, what about being strategic? And, you know, and I think there are a lot of things that are more managerial in nature. I worked with a company one time, and they had a chief strategy officer, and this person was like, it was like the person we described earlier that people, if they were on fire, people wouldn't cross the street with a bucket of water to put them out. The people had no, that this person had no idea whatsoever of what constituted.
You have any thoughts about that, Joe?
Words from Joe. The chief strategy officer in any company is the CEO. If it's not, get your resume ready and go somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Star 7, if you want to throw a question at us. Come on. Who's got the first question for us? We got lots of thoughts about leadership.
And as we're waiting, anything else you want to add? Dan, anything else that you want to say that we might not have touched in a question but you feel it's important to share? Any experiences or stories that you've had as a coach?
Well, I would just... there's another model that I learned a long time ago and the model was called the leadership gap. And the leadership gap is this perception by a would-be follower that a leader is competent and motivated to help them get where they want to go, that the leader is taking upon themselves to have these conversations, Joe, and that the leader is well thought of enough in the organization that if I work for them and give them my efforts, it's going to open doors for me. But the takeaway of the model is if there's not that perception there, if the person I'm working for isn't really much of a leader and I don't perceive that they're going to help me get ahead, I will find somebody who will,
yeah.
whether it's elsewhere in the company or leaving the company. And I actually just have a client that I've been working with that I just found out the other day, they're leaving their company, and they're well thought of there, but they're leaving because their boss has never bothered to have those conversations with them. And doesn't create a sense of direction and is just lacking in those skills.
Those things are going to happen from time to time. And what I would encourage anybody to do is network in your company so that other people, even your boss isn't necessarily helping you or encouraging you or paying much attention, maybe other people in the company will see what you're doing and see how much value you have and one way or another, directly or indirectly, help you move forward.
I agree completely.
Star 7 to talk, or put your question in the box and hit send.
I'll buy ice cream for the first person that puts a question in. Nobody likes ice cream.
You know, I'm a big fan of Dan Pink's books, and 4 or 5 years ago he came out with a book called Drive. And it's an interesting insight. And as I understand it, Dan, I think, was a lawyer by training, and then he's been a writer. But he has looked at a lot of research, and he found out, you know, if we're looking at this idea of what motivates somebody, if we're trying to get them in the right seat on the bus based on both their skills and experience, but also the work they find fulfilling, what they identified, or what he identified and put in his book, was most research from behavioral and organizational psychologists tell us that motivators like money or title or corner office or a nice car, that those things will only motivate people for so long. And at some point, what really motivates people is autonomy and the chance to do what they do with a reasonable amount of independence. Proficiency, the opportunity to do whatever it is they do, do something well. No, we like to joke that nobody ever wakes up in the morning and says, boy, I'm really looking forward to going to that job today that I'm not very good at. That it's essential that people get the opportunity to do something that they do well. And that last but not least, that they somehow make a little bit of a difference somehow in their corner of the world, that they influence other people, make other people's lives a little bit better. And sometimes as leaders, that's the best thing that we can do, is find out, how can I make these people I would lead, how can I make their life a little bit better today? And you can't do that if you don't know what's important to them and what makes them tick.
We have an online question. How do you identify leaders within your organization, and what are the ideal skills embodied in a candidate for leadership training? So what am I looking for when I'm trying to identify that?
Indeed. So let me ask, in my opinion, let me answer the second question, the last question first. I think the thing I look for first is some level of interpersonal skills, some level of, to expound on that, emotional intelligence. The ability for us to recognize and manage skillfully not only our emotions, but the emotions of others around us, which deepens interpersonal relationships. I'm of the mindset that I can teach anybody almost anything quicker than I can teach somebody to just be a nice person. and we joke about that. I had a client a few years ago, we interviewed his colleagues, so his colleagues knew he was getting executive coaching, and one day one of them said to him, so how you doing in nice school? And we laughed, but it was true. What we'd heard is this fellow needed to be nicer to people, and so we had to learn to do that. So that's the first thing that I look for. If you Google top 10 leadership traits and Psychology Today, there's an article from, I think, 2014, where they list the top 10 traits, and 9 of them are what a lot of people would call soft skills: flexibility, integrity, sincerity,
resilience,
emotional intelligence. And number 10 on the list is technical skills. It's most of the folks we work with are either at one end. They're either high potentials, which we talked about before, that we've identified are good future leaders, or they're people that are already at the highest level of the organization, and they're really strong technically, but they're lacking in the interpersonal area. They're lacking emotional intelligence.
It reminds me of a story at Tractor Supply. We had an executive many years ago who was very, very good at what he did. He really understood the business inside and out. He had tremendous instincts about what to do, but he just wasn't a nice person. And we promoted him and demoted him and promoted him and demoted him. Finally, we had to let him go. He just couldn't get along with people in spite of understanding the business as well as anybody in our company. But you've got to be a nice person in order to succeed in a leadership role.
Absolutely. In our anecdotal research, Joe, when we were looking at starting Signature, that was the message that came back to us consistently, loud and clear, over and over. It's a people skills.
It is, indeed. And so the second half of that question again was, the first half, what was the first part of the question?
How do you identify leaders?
Again, it's a broken record, but you you talk to people and assess them and spend time with them. You get out of your office and watch other people in action.
That's right.
Another online question. Assigning the right task to the right person is critical to success. Sometimes leaders are to blame when assigning tasks to people who do not have skills in that task but have skills in other tasks. So I guess figuring out what they're good at.
Indeed. So I'll answer that question, yes. I mean, ultimately, it is the fault of the leader to put somebody in the wrong seat on the bus.
They might be on the right bus, but in the wrong
seat. In the wrong role. They don't have the particular skills. And throughout the 20 years or so I was in the corporate environment, most of it in a leadership role with HCA, we had multiple situations where we had somebody in the wrong seat, but again, they had good people skills. They were teachable. They were flexible. And my old boss at HCA, a guy named Joe Steakley, give a shout out to him, was really, really good at realizing we've got this person in the wrong role. Let's figure out where else we can put them that would be a good fit, because the essentials that we talked about were there. The interpersonal skills were there. The flexibility, the reasonably emotional intelligence and ability to deal with chaos and in a reasonably calm mannered way and to be flexible. So,
just a slightly different take on that. There are some times where you've got really sharp people working for you, and sometimes you want to assign them a task that's over their head, but in forcing them to really adapt and learn and jump up to the next level. So sometimes it's good to challenge people. Now, obviously, if they don't have the skills or don't have the experience, that doesn't make sense. But sometimes, you know, somebody's gotten to level three and you want to give them a shot. Well, here's an assignment that takes you to level five or something like that. See what they can do. Sometimes people can surprise you, and you may learn a lot about people that you didn't know otherwise.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we work with these folks, it's real common. You talk, if we want to get them out of their comfort zone, how do we do so? If I'm coaching somebody and they're strong technically, but they're lacking interpersonally, and most of the time it's because they've never had that behavior modeled for them. Perhaps they grew up in a family where either there wasn't much communication going on, or the kind that was going on was extremely conflict-laden. And so sometimes folks have to learn how to navigate conflict skillfully. How do you approach an awkward conversation skillfully? And we try to give folks an extra tool or two to put in their tool belt to open up these difficult conversations, to be able to say, you know, Mary, I need to talk to you about something, and candidly, I feel a little bit awkward doing so, and this conversation is pushing me out of my comfort zone, but I know we need to talk about this, so here goes. You know, I'm really worried / frustrated / concerned / anxious how this particular project is going, and I need to talk about it.
Right. The other thing, and that just so happens that that's our topic next month, but
really?
One of the things that that I think can be really helpful too is that I tell you on the front end that I'm not, you know, sometimes the boss calls you to the office and the only thing you can think of is the worst possible scenario. So I want to put your mind at ease that we're going to have a conversation about this so I can relax enough to have the conversation. Another online question. What thoughts do you have around leaders who appear to be successful but are harsh and rash versus those leaders who are nice? How do you respond to those who think nice guys finish last?
I disagree 100%. A successful leader, we can assess across three broad criteria: the traits that they demonstrate in executing leadership, the activities that they engage in, and then ultimately the bottom line, the results that they have. And you have to look at the results first. But, you know, business schools are textbooks are page after page after page of companies where the leadership was a crack the whip and get it done, and they had really, really good results. And then so many times you find out the results were not true, and you wind up running people off. And there's more than just generating a bottom line. If you can't attract and retain quality people to sustain growth and to sustain performance over time, then ultimately your bottom line results from the crack the whip kind of person will be short-lived, and there will be a severe regression to the mean. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. In the bigger picture.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah.
Leaders attract and retain people. It's that simple.
They don't get the job. They don't do the job. They get the job done.
They get the job done.
Right.
And I'm grateful that there are people like that out there that are mean, because it means job security for us, and job security for organizations like the Scarlet Leadership Institute.
What else do we have out there? More questions? You all must be great leaders. Well, the last topic we talked about was conflict management. In our next class on April 18th, we have Dr. Andrew Johnston with us to talk about conflict management, which is a subject that we all face sooner or later, and seems like more often than we would like. So next month, April 18th, Dr. Andrew Johnston.
And he will also touch on, in the context of conflict, having those difficult conversations, because that's one of the things that is a part of his class. So those of you who have heard Andrew before know that he's a great speaker and has a lot of wisdom to share. Those of you who don't, please tune in, because I think you'll find it to be a great call.
Dan, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been
a wonderful
discussion, and this will be up on the website in 24 hours, so you can go back and listen to it or listen to parts of it however you'd like to do it, or share it with your friends, relatives, and anybody else you'd like to share it with. So we thank you all for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you on April 18th.